I can't discuss all the fine details of kind of the agreement between Moving Star and Carnegie, but basically they give us space and they give us a lot of institutional support as a group. But it was my first seed in the ground there, being asked to join this vocal improvisational ensemble, which allowed me to join the faculty as a guest artist in a teaching capacity, as well as being able to have a door that's open for pitching other projects.
Okay. When you came out of ISU, it was obvious to anyone who knew you that not only did you have multiple talents, you had a ton of ambition. When you were coming out of ISU, what was your goal? Did you have a goal, a specific goal, or what were you thinking?
I planned on moving to Chicago and doing theater and getting really involved in the Chicago theater scene, especially, I think the idea, the short-term goal was like work at Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago. But the longer-term goal, I think, had a trajectory closer to do theater in Chicago for a while and then move to Los Angeles and start working in film and television. While at the same time, when I was at ISU, the goals kind of started shifting rapidly because my last 2 years there, I started studying privately vocal, jazz, and singing, as well as I got really into Shakespeare in physical theater. And so as soon as I graduated ISU, my professor at the time, Alec Wild, who was head of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival at the time, invited me up to a Shakespeare festival he co-founded in Minnesota called the Great River Shakespeare Festival. And that kind of launched a journey for me away from what I had imagined and into something totally different, which, has led me to this point living and working in New York City and really calling that my home.
What was it that going to Minnesota did for you?
Going to a Shakespeare festival that really valued the text and the words that are being said and how their kind of thesis that a third grader should be able to understand what's being said on stage. It allowed me to unpack language in a way that I had never understood before. I never related to Shakespeare when I heard it in high school, even a lot of college. But when I heard it, and it was really unpacked for me, people sitting around a table with 5, 6, 7 high books and saying, let's investigate this, and getting to the power and the core of language. And then I suddenly said, oh, this guy, I understood. This guy was writing for a contemporary audience. He was writing for mostly people that were uneducated, yet they had a vocabulary that's 10 times the vocabulary we have today. He was all of his characters were engaging the audience during the day in a very direct way, and then they were engaging him back. And I mean him, it's like his actors and his characters. The characters would shout at the audience, and the audience would shout back. Right? And they were using words on stage and arranging them in a fashion to get what they want in life. That's what all these characters do in this beautiful, heightened way. And I was always been a beatboxer and a drummer and always listened to hip hop growing up. And I was like, this is exactly what's happening in music today. There's a rapper, there's a guy that stands on stage that uses words in an order that engages the audience, and the audience then engages him or her back. And I just thought, there's so many examples of how these things are similar. And the further I investigated, the further I learned about how Shakespeare was sampling other writers and other stories. And not only that, music of the time. His contemporary musicians that were creating music in society, Shakespeare was writing their lines into the plays. So, for example, when they say in Romeo and Juliet, palm to palm and holy palmer's kiss, right? That's a lift from a line from a popular song at the time. But that would be like referencing, I don't know, Auld Lang Syne or Lean on Me or something incredibly known and popular. So when everyone hears it, not only do they hear it, but they all know it. So they connect to it. And this is what Shakespeare was actually masterful at.
Well, you're not only performing hip-hop Shakespeare, you teach, you run seminars. Is this more of a fun thing, or was there some economics behind this?
It was both. I met somebody who's like a finance guy, and he said to me, my model is, it's got to be good for me, it's got to be good for my customer, and then it's got to be good for the world. My thesis behind wanting to create a workshop called Hip Hop and Shakespeare was it would be fun for me and I would get to continue this work. It will definitely be good for the young people that I'm engaging, because I remember how I was taught Shakespeare. It was taught by people who didn't really understand it themselves. And then I thought, oh, this will be good for schools and parents, because the whole model is engage people at the level they're at. Teaching them from a place of I'm above you doesn't ever serve them. So if you meet them where they're at, then you can actually give them something they don't know. And that was hip hop for me. So I started developing this program to meet them with hip hop and say, okay, how do I share this other great thing and make a connection that will serve them? Because if you understand hip hop already, then you can study Shakespeare. You're going to learn more language. You're going to understand bigger structures and how to write and create. And you're also going to be able to make a connection that's over 400 years old and say, okay, well, not only do I know how to rap and create music and invent language, but also I know how this is connected to every other thing that's been made in the past, and Shakespeare is, he's the high watermark for English. So if I can connect what I'm doing to Shakespeare, then I have a reference point for all culture, which everyone understands.
You're a white guy going into the predominantly black South and West sides of Chicago. You're bringing not only a white perspective on hip hop, you're bringing Shakespeare with you. What was the reception of those that you were working with initially of you?
I had a bit of a naivete where I didn't think about words, or really even know, to be honest, words like white privilege or the things which could make people feel alienated as a young white man coming into a school, university, or theater and be sharing something which is from a lineage that comes from New York, from the Bronx, and then before that, it's connected to slavery and the improvisation that happened in the fields between workers. I now know, and I, you know, as whenever I get the opportunity to share, I'm like, when I'm working in the juvenile detention centers in New York through Carnegie Hall, I'm really keen to share, like, listen, I am, first of all, I'm white, obviously, and this is not my lineage and it's not my tradition, but I love it. I respect it. I work on it. I practice with it. And I want to honor it. So you all have to know that I am not going to necessarily teach you anything you don't know. What I'm here to do is actually empower you all to be creators. And that is to say that you have the power to be Shakespeare. You have the power to be Jay-Z. You have the power to be Barack Obama. You have the power to be Warren Buffett, whatever person you want to use. But the first three especially achieved what they achieved on the power of their written and spoken word. So I'm one to really encourage the idea that through this kind of accumulation of understanding, of knowledge, and ultimately of wisdom, you can mold and shape your world as you see fit.
You also work creatively with corporations. You know, you get hired to come in and conduct seminars with corporations, creativity.
Yeah. A year ago yesterday, I delivered my first TED Talk at a TEDx conference in New York called TEDx Bushwick. So really going into and after that, I really started getting the opportunity to go into companies and share with them my experience on the values of improvisation and play to spark creativity, team building, and collaborative creation, and kind of creating a culture of openness and, dare I say, vulnerability, so that folks can feel comfortable and safe sharing ideas with each other. So yeah, in the last year, I've really been working from advertising companies to mortgage companies and a variety of everything in between, getting hired to come in and teach workshops on what I call monkey business, which is the name of my workshop, which is going in and running them through all kinds of exercises, from clown improvisation of the street performance to vocal improvisation and techniques from jazz and hip hop.
advertising agencies make sense. They're full of creative people, or what we think of as creative people. You go into another place that has a more structured corporate setup or not known for, quote, creativity. It's just get the work done. How do you teach people to be improvisers who may not even think they're improvisers, and maybe they're not?
What I do basically is I have a lot of research and case study which supports the work that I do, and none of it is from famous clowns or jazz masters or MCs or rappers. What I support my work with is research that's done by, for, and about corporations. So I use reference points from Nike to Google and Apple to Zappos.com and namely Pixar, and specifically a book called Creativity Inc. Everything that I do actually is in practice pretty parallel to what they are talking about in theory. And I also take them on a gradual journey to show them how to improvise. So I start with word games and word association, which everyone can do. And I start with making basic sounds, like get everyone to and slowly start them into getting more and more weird, and then actually take them on a group journey and improvising together from solo to collaborative. So I take them on those steps to the point where they're feeling comfortable. I never ask anyone to, you know, jump in the water from 60 feet high. I ask you to jump in the water from 2 feet high, from 7 feet high, until the point where you feel comfortable jumping in from 60 feet.
Now you have an opportunity, or you are working with the folks at Sesame Street.
Yeah, yeah. I started working with them in February. I got contacted out of the blue last summer by a producer who had found my video called Thinking About You, Bobby, which I created as the Kickstarter, and saw me singing with all of the multiple heads in this Brady Bunch style, and loved the video and wanted to pitch me for another project. And that project ended up falling through. But when the Sesame Street opportunity came around, she pitched me to producers at Sesame Street, and they ended up really liking what I was doing. And we did our first recording in February, where I sang songs about a bird from Australia called a kookaburra. I sang it two ways. Like, first way is like the kind of straight American way. What's so funny, kookaburra? What's so fun? I hope I don't get sued for this. The second way is Australia, the Australian way, because it's an Australian New Zealand bird. What's so funny, kookaburra? What's so funny to you? And that's true. And it's like, you know, I did it like 100 different ways of the kind of New Zealand accent, Australian accent, and we just played and had a really, really good time, and in talks with those folks and continuing to kind of nurture that relationship about what's possible for the future. I can't necessarily drop any spoilers, but hopefully I'll be able to share when things get firmed up and confirmed what's to come with those folks, because I feel like I've been able to kind of like look at the list of what I've wanted to work on and who have I admired since I've been a young man.
Since I was a young man, John, I've looked up to Sesame Street.
Always just deeply admired and respected the work at Sesame Workshop.
Well, and it sounds like there's some reason for optimism, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, John, I was in the booth at the same time as Anderson Cooper, and he was recording a book with his mother. And I said, listen, baby, if you want to really make it big time, I know you think CNN's hot, too hot to trot, but you really need to make your way over to Sesame Street. And I love it. I love Sesame Street. I want to make like I want to make like hip hop remixes to their theme song. I want to do everything.